Hey, this is Rob, and when I'm not busy regulating the transmission rates of our public utilities, I'm stacking Benjamins. Yeah.
Hey everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and this is the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey there, money nerds. You're an hour late. Forget to spring forward yesterday? Well, don't worry, because we waited for you with an awesome show. Our special guest today paid off over $107,000 in debt. Please help us welcome Kevin and Aaron Jones. And bringing a warning about fraud and your tax refund from National Consumer League, John Brayalt. Plus, we'll answer a Haven Lifeline call from Eric about homeowners coverage, cover some headlines about IRA rollovers, answer your letters, and still have time for the only reason you really tuned into this show, my trivia. Now, please welcome two guys who think springing forward means they're just 1 hour closer to happy hour, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Darn tootin'.
It's not a thought that we're an hour closer to happy hour. We are perpetually an hour closer to happy hour now for the next 6, 7, 8 months.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. I am Joe Salci. Hi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And welcome back. You found us. Stacking Benjamins is going for the next hour. And across the table from me, the other half of this crazy little show, the one and only other guy, or as we call him, OG.
Yeah. So for the rest of the country, it's spring forward, you know, weekend. And for Arizona, they just call it Monday. It's
just, hello, Arizona. We love
we're talking
you
to you. That's you guys right that don't believe in this.
I really, really prefer daylight savings time. Like if we should just left it that way the entire
year. I don't understand why we have to change it. I get why they started it, right? It was about energy savings and so on and so forth, but
no longer. We need a new law. There's not
there
enough
we
law
go.
There's not,
yes,
not enough laws on the books.
Yes, let's talk about this right now. Yeah. We definitely need more laws.
You know what there actually isn't, OG? There's not enough people headed to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money. How about that one? Because when you head to Magnify Money, you know what you'll find? That savings account, that checking account, and those debt products you have are not part of an overall strategy. And they should be, because you comparison shop everything. Why wouldn't you comparison shop those tools you use for your everyday financial life? When you head to magnifymoney.com, what you'll find is a very simple rating for your checking account, for your savings account, for CDs, for auto loans, for personal loans, for credit cards, you name it, they have it at Magnify Money. They'll not only tell you which one has the lowest interest rate if it's debt, or the highest interest rate if it's savings. And then they'll also tell you how horrible the paperwork's going to be. StackingBenjamins.com/Magnify Money. And by the way, the place that they rate number one at Magnify Money wherever they compete, that is our sponsor, SoFi. And if you head to StackingBenjamins.com/SOFI, you know what you're going to find there? That they're the leader in marketplace lending. And what that means is there's a person on one end who's looking to loan out some money, and you're on the other side, and they hook you up like a marriage made in heaven. Whether it's your student loan, your personal loan, or your mortgage, you point your browser to stackybenjamins.com/SOFI. They'll ask you what type of help you're looking for. And from that point, you fill in a few details about you. And like our friend Dan Macklin over at SoFi says, in a few seconds, in most cases, they'll know everything and you'll know everything about how they can work with you. You'll be able to pick from different terms, check out interest rates on variable and fixed rate options, and get the ball rolling. Head to stackybenjamins.com/SOFI. I love this type of show, OG. You know, we had that letters episode last week. Hadn't done that in a while. We also haven't talked to a listener who's had an amazing debt payoff story. The Jones family paid off $107,000 in just over 2 years. How about that? Yeah, good stuff there. We're going to talk to them about how they did it, what sacrifices they made, and I'm sure we're in for an inspirational story today. Plus, from the National Consumer League, we got John Brayo coming down to talk fraud, because just what we need is more fraud in our life too. More rules and more fraud.
I was hoping we'd get some fraud today.
Right. Big show today, so let's get this party started.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
We've got a couple great headlines here, OG, but have you ever wondered like what people are doing when you're not around? You know, you're like,
Like my kids or just random people?
Well, I've had that thought before too. Like, you know, my son is 21 at the University of Texas. Like, what's he doing right? Is he studying? Is he, you know, face down in a mud puddle? So, I mean, you just don't know.
Wow. That escalated in a hurry.
Face down
in a mud puddle.
That's right.
Quite a gap from studying. Well, there's a lot that happened between studying and face down in a mud puddle, by the way.
Maybe he's celebrating daylight savings time. I don't know. But the point is that a friend of mine and I used to play this game of, like, I wonder what Kevin Bacon's doing right now. And then we kind of laugh about what they're doing. So, you know, we have this roundtable team that is here on Fridays, Len right. Penzo, Paula Pant, and Greg McFarlane. And I wonder what they're doing. So let's peek in for a second and see what Len Penzo's doing right now.
Hey, honeybee. Grab some more of those ones over there. With the currency going, there's no way this money's going to be worth anything tomorrow, but at least it'll keep this fire going for 5 or 6 hours. Hey, you know what? Maybe we'll melt some of those nickels, too. Boy, this is fun.
Who knew? Like, we always knew that Len was always pretty negative, but did you know that he sits around the roaring fire just burning money?
Just throwing money in there.
That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing at the Penzo house today. Who knew?
All right.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Hey, our first headline comes to us from NAPA.net, which is the National Association of Plan Advisors, the people that help run 401ks, pension plans, that type of thing. Is the SEC ramping up rollover scrutiny? Much of the preparation for the Labor Department's fiduciary regulation, this piece says, has involved a focus on rollover advice. But now it looks like the Securities and Exchange Commission is gearing up for a larger focus as well. A new blog post from noted ERISA attorney Fred Reich reminds that the SEC's Office of Compliance Inspection and Examinations issued a national exam program risk alert concerning examinations about services offered by RIAs and broker-dealers to investors with retirement accounts, notably a reasonable basis for recommendations. And basically what this piece says, OG, is that when an advisor helps somebody roll over an IRA, but roll over money from a 401k or a company retirement plan like a 403b or a 457 over to an IRA, Securities and Exchange Commission is going to have the heat lamp on those a little more than they have in the past.
This is a byproduct of the Department of Labor ruling, which, of course, is still kind of in limbo to some degree,
right,
but focused exclusively on retirement plans and put the onus of the decision making of what you're going to do with your retirement plan, keep it at the plan provider, move it to an IRA, whatever. And a lot of people thought that this was all about commissions and fees and the distinction between that. And it kind of is, but the primary thing was justifying the withdrawal or the rollover, like we talk about, between your 401k and an IRA. And sometimes advisors just move the money and clients just kind of smile and nod without having any sort of conversation about why that's in their best interest. And what the SEC here is saying is, you know, just make some documentation on why you did it. It doesn't have to be totally off the, you know, you don't need to write a book about it.
Right.
But they're saying, you know, justify to us if we came and did an inspection and we pulled the files of the Jones family. Oh, why did you tell them to take their money out of their 401k and put it in the IRA?
Let's talk about why somebody would do that for a second, OG, because I think that usually the right decision is when you leave a company to roll that money over to an IRA. That is generally the number one decision. We'll talk about times when it isn't, but I think you agree with me, don't you, that it usually is?
Well, yeah, sure. Usually it is, because just from the fee component of it, there's a lot of hidden fees inside of 401k plans. Although, to be fair, those are going down lately. We see every week we've got a headline of some other company getting sued because their fees are too high. You get away from proprietary products. That's still very prevalent. I just was working with a client the other day that their money is all in a single family's, you know, single company's products. It's all ABC fund, ABC fund B, ABC fund C. And I think, you know, ABC company is a great company, but they can't be good at everything.
So number one thing you're saying is that fees can be stripped out so you can see them and you actually, for the most part, know what you're paying. Yep. Can be, isn't always the case. And I think that's what the SEC is worried about, right? Is that a lot of times when people roll money over to an IRA, they're going to pay tremendous fees because the advisor's not doing the right thing. Sometimes that happens.
Well, yeah. How many times do people take money out of their employer-sponsored 401k and dump it into a high-cost commission variable annuity?
An annuity. It's not number one place where money goes in an IRA is into a variable annuity, which generally makes very little sense at all.
Yeah.
Number two is you said you have a much bigger range of options. And you know what? I even like that if your 401k has a lot of options right now, because you are handcuffed to your 401k's choices. So let's say that they have quite a few options now, but they decide to go cheap later. You're a hostage to that if you leave your money there. If your money's in an IRA, you're always in control and you get to decide what to do. And it's nearly unlimited choices that you have to do that. There's reasons not to do it. Well, and actually, there's one more reason to do it that I just thought of, which is, let's say that your 401k is good at some things, like you've got good international funds and they've done a good job at large companies, but they haven't done as good a job of mid-sized companies and small companies. And often when I was an advisor, we'd look at the 401k that they have at work that, you know, they have to save into. And we would save into only the categories that they're good at there. And then we'd, in their IRA, we would offset that with the categories that are good elsewhere. Where if somebody looked at either one of those accounts, you know, a friend came over and happened to see it on the counter and goes, what are you doing? All your money's in small and mid cap. Well, when you look at the whole puzzle, it actually fits together pretty well. But there's reasons not to roll it over. And I think one is this idea of you're over 55 years old and separation from service.
A lot of people are familiar with the fact that if you try to take money out of your retirement plan before you're 59 and a half, there's a 10% penalty. One of the exceptions, there's a couple of them, but one of the exceptions to that is if you are over 55, but under 59 and a half, and you've separated from service that year, and you keep money in your 401k plan, you can access that without the 10% penalty. So a lot of times that becomes that bridge between, you know, I want to retire early, but how do I get money from my investment accounts without paying a penalty? One of the ways is to, you know, be sure to leave your money in the 401k plan.
And then the second thing I think is if you've got a lot of company stock, highly appreciated company stock, a rollover could be disastrous.
Well, yes and no. There's a whole bunch of other interesting tax things that go on with appreciated company stock in your 401k for sure. And if that happens to be you, you definitely need to talk to a tax person or an advisor, because there's some really cool stuff you can do and some really blow up stuff that you can do if you've got a lot of stock in your 401k plan.
And in our second headline, let's talk tax fraud, because tax filing day is creeping up on us and that brings out some ugliness. In 2014, the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration identified 2.1 million returns that claim fraudulent refunds totaling more than $15.7 billion. That's billion with a B. In 2015, the Department of Justice shut down more than 35 fraudulent tax return preparers. So what can you do about it? Well, we're very pleased that on My Dad's Shortwave, we have the vice president at the National Consumers League, which runs the website frog.org, John Breo. Welcome to the show, John.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, what are some of the red flags that my tax preparer might be creating some fraud?
Right. So first of all, any reputable tax preparer that you work with should have what's called a preparer tax identification number, or PTIN. And a preparer needs that in order to file the taxes. Consumers who are working with a tax preparer should be sure and check the IRS's tax preparer directory to make sure that their tax preparer has a number. That's available on irs.treasury.gov. And if they don't have one of those numbers, that's a big red flag. I would tell any consumer who can't find the preparer's PTIN to just walk away.
Got it.
Another red flag of fraud is that a tax preparer may ask you to sign a blank tax return. So they'll say, for example, oh, just sign it and I'll take care of everything and go ahead and file it for you. Unfortunately, what that allows them to do is that with the signed return, they can start entering in pretty much any number they'd like to try and get bigger returns from the IRS than you would otherwise get. And then they would take the difference and give you some. Unfortunately, that leaves you open to an audit by the IRS since it's in violation of many tax laws.
So what are they doing there, John? Are they then taking your refund, they're sending it to their account, and then forwarding some of the money from their account to your account? Is that what they're in it for?
So yeah, that's part of what they do. They may do things like put in more dependents than you actually have, overstating or understating the amount of income that you have so they can get a bigger refund. And then when the refund comes in, usually to the tax preparer, they'll take a cut of the check and then give you what's left over.
And then they're nowhere to be found because their name's not on the return.
Exactly. Exactly. Unfortunately, our concern and one of the reasons that we're warning consumers about this is that as we get closer to tax day on April 18th, you know, consumers are naturally going to start to feel maybe a little anxious about getting that tax return on time, particularly if you owe money. You know, that is an opening for fraudsters. We see it every tax filing season. You have tax preparers who sort of set up these fly-by-night operations out of a storefront in a strip mall, for example, and they bring in people with promises of getting your refund a lot faster, for example. And they turn out to be fraudsters. And then what happens is when the IRS catches up and figures out it's fraud, this person's long gone.
Now, you guys say there's some great places to get your taxes done that for a lot of consumers are free. Tell me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are two programs in particular I wanted to flag for your listeners. If you make less than $54,000 per year, you probably qualify for free in-person tax preparation assistance through a program called the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program. This is a program that's available in communities around the country, staffed with IRS-certified volunteers. And what they can do is help you go step-by-step through your return so that you get it filed with the correct information and get your the refund you deserve. A great way for consumers to find out where VITA is in their community is with the IRS's VITA Locator tool. And that's available on IRS.gov. The second program we wanted to flag is called IRS Free File. And that's available to anyone making less than $64,000 per year. And it's available online through irs.gov/freefile and gives you access to more than two dozen name brand tax filing software. So names you probably recognize like TurboTax, TaxSlayer, H&R Block, they all participate. What happens is that you can go on there, get access to the program, prepare your taxes for federal, and then file through that software and get your refund. Depending on the state you live in, you may also be able to take advantage of free file through your state for your state taxes as well.
Excellent. Beautiful. And that's a big help to a lot of our listeners. And for those of you driving down the road, or if you're out on your morning walk or whatever it might be, head to our show notes at stackybenjamins.com for the links that John talked about. Also, you guys operate, one more thing here quickly, John, you guys operate the website fraud.org for people that are victims of scams or for more scams. Tell me about that for a moment.
Right. So fraud.org is a great resource that we've had for more than two decades now. It's a clearinghouse for consumer education about all kinds of frauds and scams, not just tax-related scams. So if you are approached by somebody, you're not quite sure if they're a fraudster or the offer you got is legit or not, go on over to fraud.org, take a look. Chances are we've probably got an article up about that kind of scam, gives you red flags to spot. And then if you have been a victim or if you've just been approached by a scammer, we encourage consumers to use our secure online complaint form to file a complaint with us. And we take that information and we share it with a network of more than 200 law enforcement and consumer protection agencies who can and do investigate and prosecute the fraudsters.
John, thanks for hanging out with us for a few minutes today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on. And I hope all your listeners can file their taxes safely and stay safe this tax filing season.
Hey, man, I'll second that. One thing, OG, that he also told me that we didn't have time to get him on tape talking about is that if you are one of those people that can file for free, make sure that you use either the IRS's free file or use one of those firms that he talked about that are part of the IRS's program. Because All of those firms that are involved with free file, they have very specific criteria that they have to follow with the IRS. And there's nearly 0% chance that you're going to have fraud in those situations.
That's a big thing. You want to check out, you know, from a tax preparer standpoint, as much as you can about it, make sure that they're legitimate people. You got to make sure that they've got their P-10s is what it's called.
I love that thing about signing the return. You know, hey, just sign this blank return.
Yeah, I'll fill it out in a few. You should never sign blank forms. What? I don't care what kind of forms they are.
What could possibly
here,
go
right
wrong
here where it says signed OG, just sign that. Remember when you and Kathleen tried to pass that one on me?
We'll be good. Great.
Yeah. You guys are like, hey, so anyway, sign this form, OG, just one sheet of paper. We just need this, your signature. We'll fill in where it goes.
Yeah, just this blank thing.
Yeah, don't
so,
do that.
Lesson number one, don't try to pull the wool over OG's eyes. Because apparently that doesn't work.
Homie, don't play that.
Yeah, lesson number two, rolling over that IRA. I think it's a good idea to make sure that you know as much about where it's going as where it is now before you sign any of those forms to do the rollover.
A great question to ask is why?
I get so excited when I hear that somebody who listens to the show has done a great job of paying off debt. The Jones family paid off a ton of debt in just over 2 years. And man,
exciting.
I know that this is the time I want to be Dave Ramsey. You know, I want to have people do the yell, but we'll let Mr. Ramsey have his fun with that. But we are happy to talk to these
guys. Still cool to hear about how they did it.
Yeah. Aaron and Kevin Jones paid off a ton of debt. Let's say hello to Kevin Jones coming on down to the basement. And Kevin Jones joins us in the basement. Welcome, man.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, have a seat because you have a fantastic story. And I actually want to start from the beginning, if you don't mind. You know, building up debt initially, dude, is a lot of fun, right? Because you're using somebody else's money. So tell me how you found yourself in debt. What did you buy and how did it go?
So we're really good at building up debt. As far as the marriage is concerned, I contributed the most debt. And so I guess I won that battle.
Yeah, right. Good.
So coming into the marriage, I had about $10,000 of debt with credit cards that we actually kind of took care of with some money that Aaron had saved up coming into the marriage. And so that was kind of a wash. But at the same time, that was the money that she had saved up. And it, you know, was something that, you know, I wish I could do over. So we had about $10,000 in credit card debt. We cleaned that up within the first 6 months. But then once that was left over, we had $107,000 of mainly student loans and then about $14,000 in a car loan. So it was about $93,000 of student loans, about 65 of it was mine, 30 was hers, and then $14,000 for a car loan.
Let me ask you something about the credit card debt, because a lot of people go into a relationship with credit card debt. Did Aaron, and I'd love to say hello to Aaron, but Aaron has the voice that I had last week, so we're not going to put her through that. I hope she feels better. But when it came to your debt, did she know that you had that credit card debt before you guys got married, or did you wait until she said I do and then say, guess what? I come with a bonus. I've got $10,000 of credit card debt too.
So on our second date, I had mentioned that I had student loan debt. She said she had student loan debt as well. And so I was like, okay, that's great. And then, I have credit card debt. And then she said, nope, she doesn't have any credit card debt. In fact, she has money, which was very odd to me because I just figured that that's what everyone in their 20s had. And,
right.
You know, just have credit card debt always. And as long as you make the minimum payments, then everything's good. You know, but I thought that was really interesting. And she actually was getting a degree in finance and specifically in accounting. And so I thought that was interesting. And so I'd kind of pick her brain on what she was doing with investing and whatnot. And so I was getting really interested in, you know, oh, okay, yeah, you can, you know, buy stocks and and whatnot.
And not to cut you off, Kevin, but I'm curious, how was she able to save? You know, because really, I do think you're like most people, right? Where I had a ton of debt in college. I accumulated it. My family never talked about money. I think that's like most families. How was she able to put some money aside? Do you know that story?
Yeah, I think ultimately, you know, she just has the mindset of a saver. Okay. And I had the mindset of a spender. It was just natural to her to just live within her means. And at the time, she was actually working while going to school for a second degree. She took the loans out for tuition, but she was paying for her own studio apartment and managing to save money up as well. And so just recently, kind of talking to her about it, she was saying that, you know, once she did graduate, say if we hadn't gotten married and never met, that once she had graduated and the loans came due, she would have just started attacking it right away. You know, it's just very clear to me that she had a different mindset. For me, it was about you do the right thing by making that minimum payment and that's, and you're good. Right. And if you put a little bit more on the credit card, then you pay off that month. I mean, it's fine. You know, you'll just take care of it later.
Yeah, no, that is much more like the average person I think out there. I think it's amazing she married you, man. You're a lucky guy.
She's actually very loyal, probably to a fault, to a certain extent. You know, fortunately for me, I mean, you know, with the situation of me bringing in the credit card debt, her having a similar amount of cash, kind of starting out, and her basically bailing me out. I mean, it was a get out of jail free card. And so at that point, it was kind of like, well, got to put up or shut up and actually live up to kind of the expectations of what she's hoping that I can bring to the marriage.
That's awesome. I like that because you guys motivate each other. You know, sometimes we talk to couples and they are a spiral of misery, like they can talk each other into spending more and more money. And you felt like the bar is high. So I absolutely love that. But at its top, Kevin, you guys were at, was it $109,000 in debt?
107.
107. Okay. I didn't want to make that too high. So you're $107,000 in debt. And then, and what changed? Was there a time? Because for a lot of people, there's a time when you're like, you know what? This is making me sick. I can't deal with this. Do you remember where you were? Or was there a spot where you guys just had a conversation, said, you know what? We're going on the attack.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the first 6 months of our marriage, we cleaned up the credit card debt and then we kind of gained some clarity with that. It was right after the new year. On a Friday afternoon, I received a $4,000 raise for the coming year and a $3,000 bonus. And I said, all right, let's finally tackle the student loan debt. That next Saturday morning, I brought the idea up to Erin and she was more than willing to kind of get on board. We added up all of our debt. We didn't know it was 107 until that morning. And then we went for a hike and we just started talking about, you know, everything we can do to pay it off. And, you know, I presented the idea of the debt snowball and saying, okay, well, let's do this. The first loan was $1,800 and we were able to take care of that within a couple months and, you know, just kind of success ever since then.
Did you find when you were paying extra to those student loans, was it easy to pay extra toward them?
Well, that combined with, you know, one, mainly having a goal to actually pay it off and having a direction for what it is that you're doing with your money. The other part was just understanding what your monthly obligations are and understanding your income, you know, what you plan on spending and just trying to grow the gap of spending less than you make and then saving the rest. And in this case, paying off debt.
How long did it take you to pay down the 107?
It took us 2 years and 9 months, about 33 months.
Wow. Still very, very, very quick. What changed with your budget to be able to allow you to lay down some very serious money on the debt that quickly? Did you tighten things significantly? What happened?
Yeah. So, I mean, we got rid of cable.
Okay.
And then we just did, you know, a subscription service for $7. So that was a nice, you know, just a monthly change that adds up to a lot. I did not have a smartphone during that time. I just had a flip phone for that entire time. The big thing for us is eating out. And so I started to bring my lunch to work and I stopped eating out. Within a few days of actually just kind of making those decisions and really within that first week, I started to notice that our bank account actually wasn't going down every day. And it was a really strange feeling because I was used to, okay, that's what happens with every day. It just goes down. But it's like, well, you know, actually I didn't spend any money today. So it stopped going down. And as a result, I started to see more money in there than I expected. And with the plan for the debt snowball, and it was just kind of like, all right, I'm just going to focus on this loan and we're just going to push for that, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, one leads to another. When you saw that extra money, did you immediately then take it and make, like, did you make payment, like 4 or 5 different payments a month, maybe, or 2 or 3 payments a month? Or did you just make the monthly payment and make them bigger? Did you set up an automatic payment that was bigger? How did you go about doing that?
The extra money was always in our checking account, and then we would just pay the loan directly that month. So so every month we were seeing that balance come down.
Yeah. So you're manually taking whatever's extra and plopping it onto the debt.
Yeah. There really wasn't anything automatic with that process. We've implemented some other things post debt, but not during that time.
But do you think that that helped you having it in a spot where it wasn't automatic? Because a lot of times we tell people to do things automatically, but it also seems to me, just hearing your story, that was part of the excitement of paying it down was you guys once a month, you know, lopping this big number at the debt.
Yeah, I mean, there was actually a lot of fun seeing a paycheck come into your checking account and seeing it not disappear as fast and seeing it kind of remain in there. So, you know, typically what we did was we always had $1,000 in our checking account so that I'd know, I mean, we kept track of our budget, but if I knew, say we had $4,000 in there and say, okay, yeah, I got $3,000 that I can put towards the debt this month. And so I was always staring at that number and just basically trying not to spend money. That was kind of the approach.
Yeah. While over 2 years seems like a short amount of time, I'm sure in retrospect, I mean, during that time, that's a ton of days. I mean, you're looking at what, if it's 2 years and some months, you're looking at probably over 800 days. Did you ever have times when you're like, you know, we've got this big thing that we really need to spend money on, maybe on the house, or maybe you needed a vacation? Were there ever things that came up where you said, you know what, maybe we'll just extend this out a little longer?
Well, any vacation we took was either partially or almost fully subsidized. You know, Erin had a few months where she worked in the Midwest, and so we made a vacation of that, but that was partially subsidized through work. And then we drove back. Same thing. I won a design competition. I'm an architect, so we won a free trip to New York. And then we also went to Washington, D.C. as well. So that kind of allowed us to be able to save money on the trips. So actually, after we paid off the first group of loans, we, probably about 7 months into it, we decided to continue to save, but not necessarily pay off. And the idea was, let's start to save for a down payment for a house, because we were still in the mindset that maybe we should buy a house. It was probably 2011, 2012. So home prices were actually really low, but we still had about $90,000 of debt. Yeah. And we had this interesting experience where we went to a financial advisor provided as a service, as a benefit through Aaron's work. And we could have invested that money, you know, but we said, well, we have all this debt and we've done a pretty good job about paying it off so far. We paid off about $15,000 in 7 months at that point. And, you know, I definitely, instead of being a salesman, he said, you know, having a house is a lot of work and you guys have made a lot of progress on your debt. So, you know, we can certainly invest if you want, but I think you got a pretty good thing going for you. And so at that point, at home that evening, we took $15,000 and we put it towards actually a loan that Erin had that was going to be coming, starting in payment. And we just paid it down and we went from 90 something down to 80 and then we didn't look back. But that was a huge turning point.
Wow, that's cool. So I mean, I'm glad to hear that the financial advisor did that. That must have felt like at the time just completely the right decision.
It was. And you know, a few months ago we bought a house and it's been a great experience. And sure, we paid more for the house than we would have if we'd done it back then. But you know, we don't have the minimum payments. If all of our loans would have been in place all at the same time making the minimum payments, would have been $1,150, so $1,150 in minimum payments per month that we'd be making. So that just makes it really difficult to have any sort of flexibility. Right. It's basically another mortgage.
Right, right. Yeah, and a mortgage where you no longer live in the house.
Exactly. There's right. No asset to back that up.
Right, right. Well, except the education, I suppose. But yeah, I know what you're saying. So how has your life been different? So use the snowball method. The debt is gone. Do you still find that you keep your budget tight because you're used to keeping the budget tight? Have you loosened the reins a little bit? What's changed for the Jones family?
Yeah, so there's certainly been some creep in terms of our monthly budget. But, you know, once we finished the debt payoff, we took 3 months and we saved $12,000 for an emergency fund, a bigger emergency fund. And then at that point, we just started to save for a down payment on a house. And so not having those minimum payments, and we also started to put 15% into a 401k for both of us. So that kind of really opened up the amount that we were saving. At that point in time, our income was a bit higher. And, you know, we just don't have any worries. We kind of feel like we can tackle anything. I mean, you pay off $107,000 within under 3 years. You know, you're not really too scared by, you know, most financial challenges at that point.
Right. Things don't seem quite such a big mountain as that. Yeah. Good stuff. Well, man, thanks for sharing your story with us. That's so exciting. Are there any financial tools that you use now to make things easy? Because you know we have our FreshBook FinTech Friday. Are there any tools you use, any apps you're using, any budgeting software you're using that you really credit for your success? Or was it mostly just keeping your nose to the grindstone?
There's a couple of things. Mint was a big one for us, just tracking our daily expenses and comparing that to our budget. And then we also had a pretty detailed spreadsheet in Excel, where we really got into the numbers. I had amortization tables, really started to understand how interest works and how paying down principal and interest and all of that. It was just kind of a lab experiment in a sense for us to really get into.
You guys are nerds, Kevin.
Erin's definitely great at Excel, but there was plenty of times where I think she was like, all right, Kevin, you need to lay off on some of these formulas. You know, but it was, but the time that I was spending doing the Excel or getting into the numbers or where that, you know, whatnot, I was not spending money. And so
right.
It's a good balance.
No, I totally love that. Well, thanks again for telling your story. I appreciate you coming down to the basement and sharing that with us.
Oh yeah. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Hi, everyone. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I'm back. And I just love that Bee Gees song, Steak and a Knife, don't you?
Steak and a knife, steak and a knife.
Well, that got me thinking about the obvious next thought, beef prices. Here's some trivia. Upton Sinclair wrote a book in 1906 that exposed the corrupt and unsanitary U.S. meatpacking industry and stockyards so vividly that beef prices, and particularly steak, plummeted 95% for about 3 years. What was the title of that book?
Hey, stackers, know what I love? I love saving money on things that aren't important. I'm not one of these people that wants to live in a cabin in the woods. Don't get me wrong, that's your goal, that's fine, but that's not something that I'm looking for. I'm looking to spend money on experiences that are fun and not spend money on stuff that I don't care about. You know one thing I don't care about? I'm not attached to my bank. So why do people stick with the same bank forever when banking has completely changed? Head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money and you'll find out how much. You'll find out how badly your checking accounts performed. You'll find out how horrible that savings account you have is. You'll also find out that the debt products you're using are a big fat waste of time. So if you're going to consolidate your loans, why not do it the best way possible? If you're going to bank with anybody, why not make them the best possible? StackingBenjamins.com/magnify money. And if you pay your bills on time and you want to unbank, I love the hashtag don't bank. SoFi is not only best in class there, but guess what else they're doing? They're offering you $100 over a short amount of time. Not sure when this deal's going to end, but they're offering $100 if you use our link, stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. Whether it's for your mortgage, for your student loans, or personal loans, if you're refinancing and looking for a super low rate and you're somebody with a great history of paying your bills on time, you know who you are. StackingBenjamins.com/SOFI. Don't have to earn a lot of money, but you have to be somebody that's responsible with the money that you do have.
Hey everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I'm back and we meet again. This time for your delicious trivia answer. And the stakes have never been higher. And to answer your question, yes, I could do this all day, but let's get you to your trivia answer. Here was the question. Upton Sinclair wrote a famous book in 1906 about the meatpacking industry that dropped prices 95% for about 3 years. What was the name of the book? Upton Sinclair's tell-all book was called The Jungle and was originally written to expose working conditions, not the meatpacking industry. Sinclair used the money to build what he thought was going to be a utopian colony in New Jersey. That's an oxymoron. Anyway, sadly, after 6 months, it burned to the ground. Apparently, Sinclair's building was charred, but not well done. Too soon? Hopefully not. See ya!
Got some new friends in New Jersey, and I find that offensive.
That is, man, what's he got against?
Terribly offensive.
What's he got against New Jersey?
But maybe South New Jersey. I don't know.
I guess.
Is that a place? I don't even know.
I guess that trivia was a little before your time.
A skosh. I did know that it spawned the USDA, of course.
Yeah, right.
I just didn't know the name of the book.
Big congratulations again to the Jones family. Isn't it funny how often people, when they tell us these success stories, restaurants and these meals that you have outside the house that really add no value to your life. I'm not talking about the special anniversary meal, OG. Just the, hey, I don't feel like cooking, let's go out. Cut that out of your budget. How many times do we hear that is a big way to get the budget in order?
I've said 1,000 times, probably to 1,000 different people, that I think that money expands into what you allow it, right? You know, the more money you make, the more your life expands. And we recently had a reduction of income when Mrs. OG stopped working. And we didn't purposefully sit down and say, we're not going to go out to eat and that sort of stuff. But it just doesn't happen as much over the last 2 months because she's home every night and she cooks. And the one thing that I did notice last night was she was making dinner, which was fantastic. And it dawned on me that we were using all sorts of other things in the refrigerator I don't want to say to hodgepodge, make a dinner, but we cleaned it up. You know what I mean? It was like, well, we got a little of this and a little of that, and let's put some of this in there. And now we have dinner, as opposed to going, well, all that stuff is old. Those are old tomatoes, so we should throw them on. No, we're just going to cook them, you know? And we still go out to eat once a week, but not Mrs. OG's not driving to work and she's not going out at lunch every day. And we probably went out to eat 3 times a week because of scheduling kids, and now we just don't. And
Cheryl and I think we're pretty good at meal planning, but our refrigerator finally died and we got a new refrigerator yesterday. And what's amazing is when you're cleaning
those are free.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a great day. if I had any hair left, it would be gone.
Yeah.
Gone. And what's there's gray. So no more of that. But anyway, we looking through the freezer, I always thought we were fantastic at meal planning, and there's still some stuff.
Buy pork chops?
Yeah, we seriously, the next 2 weeks, we could eat in, not buy any groceries except maybe some vegetables to round out the meal, and we are good. Like, we are seriously good.
Until you get down to ketchup and mustard left in your fridge, there's still food. I mean, if you really wanted to get to it. So yeah.
I did find something in the back of the fridge that I'm like, really? I think we keep a pretty clean fridge. And I was still pretty disgusted.
You're like, Girl Scout cookies.
From 2007.
They're frozen. They're still delicious.
Hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency are disrupting the life insurance industry by focusing on those two things you value most, your family and your time. It's why they created a high quality, affordable term life insurance policy that you can purchase entirely online. Qualified healthy applicants even skip the medical exam. I love that part. Head to stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life now to get a free quote and learn about life insurance the modern way. I've also been told, I was talking with our friend Brittany over at Haven Life, and she said that the Haven Life CEO, he would be willing to come on the show and answer life insurance questions. So cool. If you've got life insurance questions, head to stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. And we might have a guest. A fairly qualified guest.
A celebrity guest answerer.
Yeah, yeah. Who can answer your life insurance questions? Like, how much should I get? What should I do? So stackybenjamins.com/voicemail, and we'll accumulate all those. And maybe if we get like 3 or 4 of those, we'll just guest answer. But for today, we don't have a question about life insurance, OG. We got a question from our new friend, Eric. Say hello, Eric.
Hello, Joe, and that other person is. So my name is Eric. I live in Texas. I've always wondered, homeowners insurance, let's say my house burns down and I have it insured and I have the possessions insured and, you know, I have all the recommendations for homeowners insurance and I need to rebuild and I need to buy all my stuff again. How do I do that? Do they just cut me a check for the amount? Do they require that I show them every single thing that I owned and then they give me a depreciated amount? I've always wondered, am I really protected by having homeowners insurance? So if you could help me out, that'd be great. Thanks. And I've never learned anything.
And I'm glad he remembers the name of the important person on the show, too.
Mm-hmm.
that's the best part.
Mm-hmm.
So homeowners insurance, OG, what do you think?
Well, apparently he doesn't value my opinion. So
so you want me to answer this one?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts. First, hello, Eric. Notice how I easily remembered your name. Very simply. I wrote it down and then I looked at my notes and I said, Eric's calling. So I just say, hello, Eric. It's a polite thing to do when you meet somebody for the first time. Very polite over here. Alas, homeowners insurance. I have actually some intimate knowledge of how homeowners insurance works, although I was a child when we had our house catch on fire. But I do know that it does work. Really, what it boils down to is two really important things, replacement coverage or residual coverage, right? And maybe they call it a little bit different. But basically, the difference on the content on the inside is your insurance company going to pay for you to go buy a new TV, or are they going to give you money for the value of what your TV was in the house? And so you think about the depreciated value. You know, you're not going to go buy a $1,500 TV, hang it in your living room, and 2 years later, it's not worth $1,500 anymore, right? It's an old TV. It's worth $300. if you've got the residual coverage or the depreciable coverage, then the insurance company says you had a 50-inch TV, that's worth $300. If you have replacement coverage, they say if you want to go buy a 50-inch TV, it's $1,500, right? So there's a big difference right there, right out the gate.
And most people have replacement coverage.
You think so?
I do.
I think there's some surprises in there. I bet you I'm going to totally pull a number completely out of my drawer and say 70%. I have no idea. I see home insurance policies all the time. I am surprised by the number that are not full replacement value.
Really? That surprised me because I can't remember one when I was an advisor. Well, no, I do. I remember exactly one because it surprised the hell out of me.
There you go.
I'm like, hey, you know why your homeowners is so cheap? Because it's not giving you anything. That's why.
You're not getting anything. As far as the, you know, my house burns down, I got to rebuild. Usually what happens, and every insurance company is going to be a little bit different on this, but usually what happens is they cut you a check and your builder, almost like a car insurance company would, in stages. So they don't hand you a check for $300,000 and go, hey, go get them, Tiger. They want to know that you're using that money to rebuild the home. And they'll say, okay, we need to pour the foundation. That's $10,000. Here's a check for $10,000 made payable to you and the foundation person.
I can speak to contents too when it comes to contents because I had a bunch of my contents.
Unfortunately, had to file a claim.
They will ask you for an inventory of what was in your house. They'll ask you for some very simple proof. I had to, for my insurance company, I had to provide some pictures, you know, like of earrings, like Cheryl wearing them. And it was hard, by the way, because of the fact that with some of this stuff, I used to give what we call rubber chicken dinner seminars all the time, where you'd be in some hotel, you know.
Best Western conference room.
Yeah, some conference room and everybody.
Buy some financial planning.
Beating this stuff. And I would stand up there and talk about basic financial planning. I do this at companies. And I would always tell people, I would say, videotape all your stuff. And what's funny is I took my phone around just a few months before and I'd looked at a bunch of stuff and then I had that file. I still had the file, but I missed so much stuff because I didn't take it seriously. And then when we got ripped off, I'm like, I don't have pictures of anything. Like but didn't eat my own cooking there. So anyway, and on big ticket items, they want to know how much you paid, exactly what you had. And luckily in places where I didn't have the receipt, I could go back to my credit card statement and I could find it on the credit card statement. And in some cases, like with Target, I went to Target and Target was able, if I could give them the day that I bought it without anything except the day that I bought it and the credit card that I used, they were able to pull up a full receipt of what I bought.
They're like, here's the bald white guy's shopping trip.
That's
from Target. You were the only guy there that day that bought shampoo and a whole bunch of candles, scented bath candles.
I was and a television.
And a TV. Right. We didn't know what was happening, but we were impressed.
Like, wow, what a combination. Motivated. Right. So what they did, though, they took those numbers and they gave me first the depreciated value, the value of what they were worth at the time. But then, and this is the key with my replacement value coverage, as I replaced them, I sent that receipt in as I replaced stuff. And then they gave me the difference once I replaced it. So it actually was a two-check system. Started off with a depreciated value, and then when I repurchased something, then they sprung for the rest.
Yep.
Yeah, good stuff, Eric. Thanks for the question. If you've got a question for the Haven Lifeline, send those to stackybenjamins.com/voicemail or another easy way to get there. If you just head to stackybenjamins.com and at the top it says questions for the show, click that button, go down to the bottom of the page, and you'll see the Haven Lifeline right there. Really easy. You just use your computer, click a button, and bam, you're there. And once again, if you've got life insurance questions, the CEO of Haven Lifeline could come on, and that would be fun. So bring us your life insurance questions. That'll be fun. Hey, Doug also brings down the mail, and we've got a great letter here from our friend Ty today, OG. Ty says he's been listening to Rick Edelman a lot. Rick's been on the show a couple times, of course, a great radio show of his own. Mm-hmm. And he was running through the math on why doing a Roth conversion is it worth it, since you'll end up the same amount in after-tax money when it's all said and done. He used an example of if you put $100 into a regular 401k today and it doubles by the time you retire and you're in a 25% tax bracket, you'd end up with $150 in after-tax money. And if you put it into a Roth, your $100 is now $75 after taking out the 25% in taxes. And if it doubles, you'd have $150 when you retire. So my question is, unless you're in a low tax bracket now and plan on being in a much higher tax bracket when you retire, does it ever make sense to put your money in a Roth? Since, as Rick puts it, you don't know what Congress will do with the Roth accounts in the future, and you can for sure get a deduction now if you put it all in the deductible account. What are your thoughts on this? Great question. He wants us to second guess Rick Edelman. How do you like that?
Yeah, do what Rick says. He's pretty smart. He's been on the radio a lot longer than you and I have together combined. Here's my thoughts on Roth IRAs. I do agree, you know, maybe a little conspiracy theory here. I don't think the Roth's going to be around forever. I wouldn't be surprised in 10 years if it was gone. And the reason for that is you just got to kind of think about why they started it, right? They started it because all these baby boomers were putting all their money in tax qualified plans. We're not paying taxes on it. And now the government says, we need money today. We need tax money today. So we'll trade people tax money today for tax-free in the future. Well, now what's all the rage? Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks. And eventually the government's going to say, oh, dang, now we got all this money in tax-free accounts. We're never going to pay taxes on. No one ever will pay taxes on again. Darn it. Now we don't have any money in the future to tax. So I think the gravy train will come to an end. That's my theory on it. But I don't argue with the math. Because he's exactly right. The difference between a 401k or an IRA and a Roth is that the government mandates your distributions. So at 70 and a half, regardless of whether or not you want the money or need the money, the IRS is going to say it's time to pay the piper. And you have to take a certain amount out every year based on the account balance the year before and pay taxes on it, regardless of what you're using it for. And in the Roth, you don't have to do that. Not only do you not have to do that, but nobody ever, 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 never, ever, ever has to pay taxes on it as it stands right now. And that's kind of Rick's, you know, asterisk there, I think, is we don't know what the future is going to hold. But when it comes to planning, I guess we make the best decisions with the information that we have at hand. I don't know that I can count on the government to go back in time and change the tax code. Like, it wouldn't be surprising if they stopped the Roth, but I would be really surprised if they said, and also everybody who has one, we're going to make them pay taxes on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they're going to, that would be really kind of.
That's what I was going to say. There's been one time in history, very famous time back in the 1980s,
right,
where there were oil limited partnerships, oil and gas limited partnerships, where all of a sudden the government went, yeah, those aren't the tax shelter they used to be. And those things,
time to pay the piper.
Yeah, those things crumbled to the ground really fast. And whenever anybody changes anything since then, they always bring up that same exact instance and how it just had all these unintended consequences. And so what we've seen the government do in the past has been grandfathering, right?
Yeah, they just say, starting today, there's no more of those. If you still have one, you have it forever. But
yeah, almost like when you see an old Keogh plan, right? You're like, well, why does somebody have one of those? Well, the tax law changed and now it's not the thing that it used to be. So you could have that now, but you're probably not adding any more money to that. When it comes to the math, you know, Rick's math works at a certain age, but whenever you look at any of these calculators, OG, two things, you know, my 2 cents on this is, number one, we've always seen tax creep happen. Tax reductions are things that politicians like to talk about. But if you look at the trend,
unicorns.
Yeah, if you look at the trend over time, tax creep happens. So generally, taxes do tend to go up over time. Doesn't mean it's going to, but I think that the likelihood of that happening, if I'm in Vegas versus taxes going down, probably better that they're going up, number one. Number two is, the younger you are, the less of a consequence that initial taxation on the Roth matters, because of the fact that you're not going to use that money for such a long period of time before you take the money out. So the younger you are, the more that math works in your favor. So if Rick would have done that math, I think a little differently, where the person had, let's say, 35 years, you know, and we showed a little bit of tax creep, the math comes out in favor of the Roth IRA. When you, but that said, I still don't buy the, it has to be either or. I still like both. I like diversifying my tax structure so that I've got some great deductions today and I give myself flexibility for the future. The either or thing drives me crazy.
Well, it's not a once and done thing either. So it's not like you pick this year and then you say, well, this is how I've got to be the rest of my life. You change based on your circumstances. If you have a large bonus coming, well, maybe you say, well, this year I got to really focus on some tax deductions because I'm, you know, or to your point, creeping up into another bracket or, you know, the higher end of the bracket that I'm currently in. Or, you know, maybe like, for example, in our household, Mrs. OG, I mentioned this, she stopped working. So our income is going to be different this year than it has been in the last several years. So now we don't get as much value out of the tax deduction because our income's lower. So now it makes more sense for us to do Roth contributions as opposed to maxing out tax deferred plans this year because we have less income. So we're changing it as we go. And that's what we advise, you know, clients to do too. Is it's not an either or. It's an and it changes every year.
Planning on an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird. Right. By the way, Rick Edelman's book, The Truth About Money, my favorite book on finance.
Favorite money book.
It is easily my favorite money book. And if you want to buy that and you also want to help the show, head to stackybenjamins.com/Amazon. That'll take you right to amazon.com. And they give us a little thank you, a little something, something for sending us, sending you their way. So thanks a ton to Ty for the question. Thanks for making us fight with Rick Edelman. I don't want to get a fight with Rick Edelman.
No, Rick will smoke us.
Rick is way smarter than we are.
And he's a good dude, right?
He is a great dude. He's been on the show twice. And every time, you know what he does at the end of every interview? At the end of both times, and I really like this about Rick, we finish and I go, thanks a ton for coming on again, Rick, or thanks a ton for coming on. And Rick says, did you get what you needed? Because if not, you know, just press record and we can keep going. Did you get what you needed? I'm like, that's just
nice guy, huh?
Yeah.
Always looking out for other people.
Very, very good guy.
That's why he's got a successful business.
It might be. Yeah. Slightly successful. Right.
Yeah. You know, he may have heard of it.
That's right. Hey, if you've got a question for the show and you want to write us a letter, send those to joe@stackybenjamins.com. I'll tell you, we're seriously behind on letters again, even though we just had a letters episode. We're going to need another one, OG, in a couple weeks because we're behind. If you really want to get on the show right away, and somebody just said this to me in the green room, said, I can't believe I went to the Haven Lifeline, and man, I can't believe how quickly I got on your show. Yeah, the Haven Lifeline, we're always just running a couple shows ahead. So stackybenjamins.com/voicemail, probably the way to go. If you have a more complex situation and you need a good financial planner in your corner, OG's taking clients. And you know what that means? To get on his schedule, here's what you do, stackybenjamins.com/OG, and he'll tell you more about how he works and how you and he can work together. But that phone call is also a lot of listening on your part, OG. You're listening to find out what they're actually up to and starting to help them put together some strategies.
We have a good time.
Yeah, good stuff. Speaking of good time, show was a fantastic time, wasn't it? Congratulations again to Kevin and Aaron Jones for paying off that much money in debt.
The anchor around their neck is gone.
It's
so much lighter, isn't it? I mean, you used to have debt. I've had it. There is no pillow as soft.
So inspirational. Fantastic for them. Thanks again also to John Brayo, Vice President over at the National Consumers League. And we'll have links to fraud.org and the National Consumers League in our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. All right, Doug, take it from here. What should we have learned today, man?
So what did we learn today? Sit back and relax, Joe and OG. I got this. First, thinking about an IRA rollover? Make sure you know all the facts. If you have lots of company stock in your plan, there might be a better option. Also, big congrats to Kevin and Aaron. You too can pay off your debt one step at a time by following their lead. But the big lesson? If you become a vegetarian, that might be a huge mistake. And you know what? I was just thinking that a steak pun is a rare medium well done. A big thank you to Ken and Aaron Jones for coming on the show. You'll find a link to another publication that talks about their amazing debt payoff story at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Special thanks to everyone for listening to today's show. It was fantastic meeting you. Thanks for staking it out with me. Oh yeah, he still got it.
Welcome to the after show. For those of you new to Stacking Benjamins, this is the part of the show that doesn't exist. What happens in the after show stays in the after show.
It's got to be secret.
We do not talk about this part of the show.
So somebody on Facebook the other day mentioned, I learned not to watch Wolverine in a part of the show that doesn't exist.
Yeah. And somebody else said, I wish there was a show that talked about movies. And I like that. I wish I could find a podcast that talked about movies. And I like that. Yeah, we talk around
secret.
It, man.
Secret.
People are doing a much better job. By the way, if you want to join our closed Facebook group at stackybenjamins.com/greenroom, because it's a big, long URL. But if you just go to that page, there's a click and it'll click through to the green room group. But we got the corrections department out first before we do this hilarious thing. You know, I mentioned that Logan, that Wolverine's not a mutant because he had the metal put into his hands. He heals. He is a mutant, and I knew that. The reason they could put the metal in his hands is because he naturally heals. You know, you see him get shot, and then he expunges the bullet. Like, he naturally heals. Oh.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, okay. He's very hard to put down, and he is a mutant. I'm like, oh, my God. And in fact, it's funny. The people that said that said, Joe, we got to take away your nerd card now. So, and I feel bad.
It's okay. You've got a lot of nerd cards, so you can give one or two of them away.
I got a few others. You've got a nerd card, which is a money nerd card. You found this YouTube video, which is on reverse inheritance. We're going to leave the... We're going to leave you with this, everybody. Have a fantastic day. We'll see you back here on Wednesday, Stacking Benjamins.
It says here that the administration is proposing another big spending bill.
But the government's out of money. How are they going to pay for all that?
They're not. They're just going to spend more money that they don't have.
And just let future generations pick up the tab? Boy, I wish we could do that with our finances.
Do you wish you could spend money you don't have and simply let someone else pay for it? Well, if you're a parent with a child 16 or younger, now you can. Hi, I'm Robert Wagner, and I have an important message today about a new financial program called a reverse inheritance. A reverse inheritance is a government-approved loan that allows parents to create a steady income stream for themselves simply by unlocking the equity in their children. That's right. You can begin receiving regular monthly payments now at no cost to you, simply by spending your children's future income. With a reverse inheritance, we compute the future lifelong earning potential of your children. Then you simply sign a large percentage of their future income over to us. In return, every month, you get a check. Spend the money on virtually anything you want. Pay off old bills, fix up the house, or take that dream vacation you've always wanted. Treat this money just like it's yours. And remember, you personally never have to pay it back.
For years, my wife and I only spent the money that we earned. Then we realized that the government was laying claim to our children's income. Why shouldn't we?
With a reverse inheritance, we found that you can enjoy the better things in life, even if you can't pay for them.
We treated ourselves to lavish dinners at five-star restaurants. For the sake of our children, of course.
Me and Georgia here, but we went out and bought ourselves a brand new wardrobe. For the sake of the children.
We even went on a romantic Mediterranean cruise. For the children.
And when our creditors, they...
When they said,
who's gonna get the bill for this?
We said, it's for the children.
Enjoy all the good things in life. Fine food. Fine clothes, fancy cars, and exotic vacations, knowing that you'll never have to pay for it. You too can live in luxury simply by forcing your children to finance your lifestyle. I know, it sounds too good to be true, and you probably have a lot of questions. That's why we created this free educational video, The Guide to Living Beyond Your Means. It explains all the aspects of a reverse inheritance. such as how politicians have been using reverse inheritances for years, the differences between a reverse inheritance and involuntary servitude, and how to relieve your guilt over a reverse inheritance and how it will affect your children. Over a million freeloaders have already called for the free video, and now it's your turn.
Unlock the equity that you'll never have with reverse inheritance.
You've done so much for your kids. It's time they did something for you. Mortgage their future with a reverse inheritance.